say there are no apologies. I understand no apologies. No leave of absence to students. Welcome to staff. Thank you. Conflicts of interest. Are there any conflicts of interest? Public forum, no. Presentations, no. Confirmation of minutes. I've read the minutes, two sets of minutes. One, 12th of June, regulatory committee meeting. The other one, 12th of June, public excluded regulatory committee meeting. I'm happy to move those.
One of those minutes had the wrong chair and deputy chair.
Did it have the wrong cover?
It could have been the wrong, different one. Yep. I'm not sure whether it was this one or...
12th of June.
The public excluded committee.
Yeah, just showing that I read them.
Thank you. So you'll actually, so you can move these then, Councillor Neil.
Happy to do that.
Subject to that change.
Yes. Thanks.
Do we have a second to Councillor Neil?
Yep.
No? Okay. I put the motion that the minutes of these meetings be received and confirmed as true and accurate record, subject to those changes. Yeah?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to actions. So I won't talk about coal because that's referred to the technical committee. The wallaby control we're going to talk about shortly. The Kokura Stream Coast study, it says complete, but I think that was forwarded to DCC. And enforcement action details has been listed as complete as well. If everybody's in agreement, I'll move on to the first report. It's a matter for council decision. That's the MOU with Environment Canterbury on wallaby control by Dr. Gavin Palmer. The purpose to consider and endorse a framework set up in the proposed MOU by which the ORC and ECAN will collaborate, cooperate and communicate with each other on wallaby management and control. I won't go through the detail. There's a few pages there and in the appendice itself there's the MOU, but I will make a number of comments in terms of my initial discussion with Dr. Palmer. Initially, my reaction was that the MOU, it seemed to me when I first read it, didn't commit to a lot. That we await, still await the objectives, and it's pointed out that we await the outcomes of the PES plan process. That PES plan process could take some time, mind you. We await a work program, and there were no details in terms of the boundary access issues, for example, dam relationships with electrical controllers. So subsequently spoke with Dr. Palmer. He emphasised to me that, in fact, what this is a relationship framework that an operational plan will be developed in due course or is being developed. Ideally, we see that here at committee. And he can, in fact, have already signed. What have I missed out, Dr. Palmer? Any comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think you've covered that well. And this is just one element to do with management and control, the others being the regional pest management plan that is currently being reviewed, and then the operational plan that we're required to prepare within 3 months of that plan being adopted. So this is complementary to those other things. As you say, it sets the relationship framework, and then the detail is sitting in an implementation plan, which is in your agenda as well.
Yeah, I'm not saying I agree with it, but thank you. I'm going to open it up for discussion. Councillor Carmen Hope.
Oh, thank you, Chair Brian Scott. That's very nice of you. I just wanted to ask you three a question, which was, we have quite a detailed little book on the wallabies. It has quite an evil little cover, and I think we could make it a great T-shirt, just quietly. Please don't print the ODT. But what I wanted to know from you is, what does Environmental Canterbury have? Do they have anything like we do in the way that we have an actual book that we dedicate to say to people, look, this is our problem with our wallaby, this is why we don't want it, this is what you've got to do. What have you seen that Environment Canterbury have got?
Totally honest, I'm not 100% sure, because I know that we book was developed, and whether it be developed in conjunction with Environment Canterbury, I just couldn't say that at the moment, but we can find out.
So it'd be interesting, wouldn't it, to see how much this stacks up with what they're publicly also showing that they're going to do. And I think that's a really important part here, that I'd like to see some grunt, if you like, from them. We're doing our bit here. We've got this, but I'd love to see what they're doing too. Thank you.
Councillor Brown, and then Councillor Lawton, then Councillor Lewis.
Thank you, Mr Chairman. I must admit I read this paper with growing concern when you look at the increase in numbers over the last decade. It is quite concerning. You almost think we're halfway to losing losing the battle. But I too are just a little concerned about how much teeth this document will have. I think obviously there's been parts of it have got to be negotiated yet, and I think one thing that does need a serious look at is the report back procedures, regular reporting to this council and regular reporting to the public at large. It's been a wee bit vague up until this stage, but that certainly needs done. But increase in numbers, and I just hope that we've got some real teeth to this document, because it's quite concerning.
Yes. Okay. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you, Councillor Brown. That was just what I was going to ask, that we ensure that this has some teeth, and actually if it's signed by us as a council, it needs to be also at a political level, so there needs to be more face-to-face, I think, meeting with the councils to make sure that we're seeing eye to eye on that.
Okay. Councillor Bell. Councillor Lawson, you had your hand up at some point.
Well, after you, Councillor Bell.
Yeah, Councillor Bell.
Yeah, well, I was really following on from Councillor Lawton's view on the political scene, but we need to have that more political involvement, but we also need to put, you know, that meeting in October that we had at Waitaki, Mr. Byfield came back and suggested that we need to get to government and get some money jointly together, and that would buy us some infrared equipment that's going to be able to identify where these wallabies are and where they're tracking and where they're going to be.
At the same time, we've got plenty of money, haven't we?
So that, yeah, exactly, we're just going to get into Mr. Watson's name's bucket. And but the fact is that what we've got to do is actually politically get that money, and that was the whole objective of this memorandum of understanding. And it's all the other little bits and pieces will take place as they already have been, because I think they've been talking to each other on most occasions anyhow. But let's get involved politically, and we need to get to Wellington to get the right amount of money to be able to get this stopped and to get these wallaby spreading stopped. But we've got to know where the wallabies are, and to do that we need the sophisticated equipment, and neither parties have got that money to be able to afford that, and so we need that government assistance to be able to make that work. So that needs to be one of our very first and foremost things that we actively meant to be doing. Not waiting for our pest plan draft to come out. This should be getting done now.
How much does that equipment cost, roughly?
To get set up with the more basic equipment, just for groundwork, you can be talking about $15,000.
Yeah, so ECAN and ORC can't move ahead on wallabies because of $15,000.
That's not what it is.
No.
What it is for the sophisticated equipment to get up there in the chopper to be able to get over there and measure it. It's not the ground stuff that you're talking about, the day-to-day pest destruction, so to speak. It's actually getting... They mentioned there that day we had an Omaru, if those who were there can remember.
That's right.
Yep. That they said that they had these helicopters already that they've been using.
Yes.
They knew that this existing military equipment was going to be required, but it cost money,
yes,
and it's more than $15,000. And so I think the money was in the low hundreds or whatever it was, but it's a bigger number than 15 grand by a long, long shot. But that's the sort of money in cooperation that we must get from MPI and whoever is responsible there, the Minister of Environment, whatever it all is, because I'm not sure who's meant to be out there. But we have got to work actively, politically, most importantly.
Mm. Councillors.
So you were just going to ask a question, though, before about the 15K, I think you were going to respond. So I'll let you respond to that first.
Through Mr Chair, the kind of gear you're talking about, the stuff used from helicopters, is more than $4,000 an hour. $4,000 an hour direct cost. It is very, very expensive to operate, so you have to have a really, really clear plan and purpose for deploying it. So what ECAN are doing at the moment is they are running a trial, because there are some issues as to whether it will actually work in the kind of terrain where we have wallaby present. depending on the outcome of their trial, we are gearing up to potentially trial it, say, in the Three Mile Hill area where we have a recent observation. So it's very much in a trial stage at the moment.
My concern is the amount of time that this whole process is taking. It took us a long time to get the meeting with ECAN. We eventually got there. That was in October. And now we're almost, you know, in August. We're going to be a year gone. And I know it all takes time, but in the meantime, the wallaby situation is going to be getting worse.
Can I?
Thank you. CE. Ms. Gardner.
No, no, you go for your life, sir.
Your office radar. All right.
So, look, I think, just putting cards on the table, I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that there is some history behind this issue that we have now started to uncover as we look further into it. And I would suggest that it is a little unfair, the position we're taking in regards to Environment Canterbury. When I flip back on history and decisions that were made, whether they were made by staff or by councillors, we had some options put to us in 2012 that would have made a difference, and we chose to, and I think there were three parties involved, the energy company and ECAN, who were willing to put their hand in their pocket, and for whatever reason, back then, we were not. So we've got some relationship repair work to do. And I think rather than throwing stones at each other, what we need to do is use the MOU as a starting point.
Yeah.
And start being a little strategic about being clear about what we are as ORC prepared to put in the game in terms of our skin in the game that we can take to ECAN and then have a conversation about and say, well, here, guys, this is what we're willing to offer up. Can we do something else with you in partnership? But I just would caution you on suggesting that it's one-way traffic in regards to ECAN.
Yeah, I'm certainly not saying it's one-way traffic. What I'm saying is that we have wallabies on our side of the hill that actually have come from their patch, and they denied the leakage when we were there a year ago, those who attended that meeting. And we had the evidence of the leakage because we had filmed it. But the fact is that the Maniototo from the forestry back up into the hills, the scrub and the type of country that it is in there, it's hard to be able to spot them. They move so quickly. We had Kevin and co here with you, Richard, last time, once here before in the presentation, and I think what they were saying, they also want to be able to capture some and tag them to so know just exactly where they're moving and where they're bringing in those bigger, because they do know there is bigger patches of wallabies on our side of the region, on our side of the boundary. And you're right, Sarah, it is our responsibility. And so what I'm saying, what I don't want it to do is just it all falls back to where the rates go back and put on to a few farmers around Maniototo that may boundary that, because I think that's unfair. I don't know quite how the rating system would have worked on this, but they have a fear of that also. What needs to be done, we need to be working together because there's a leakage down there in the Canterbury area, and we need to be working to be able to get some responsibility and access from the government to also help us out to be able to get this process done so that the costs are being fairly distributed.
Thank you, Councillor Bell. Thank you, Ms. Gardner. Some good words, some good thinking. Councillor Woodhead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mrs. Gardner's right, and I put my hand up. I picked up a couple of stones and threw them. But it's now time to move on. Staff are working very well together between the two organisations and coordinating work programs. The last time we discussed this matter, we were concerned about not getting an MOU in place this triennium. So I communicated that and have followed up a number of times with the chairman at ECAN. And then we've asked Mr. Palmer and his counterpart at ECAN to draft up what we've got in front of us. Yes, it's the first step, and there's some detail to come in underneath with the work plan, etc. And we've got our own pest plan to lock down and have an operational, what's the term, plan that comes in, falls out from underneath
that. Security strategy?
Yeah. So, yeah, and our own staff are working virtually on a daily basis on wallaby controls. So I'd like to move the recommendations and to ensure that we do get this MOU in place and we show intent to work collaboratively with ECAN, and it'll be the next council will have to pick this baton up pretty quickly and keep an eye on it and make sure we have in place a work program, etc., and the appropriate resourcing to get the job done. With respect to Councillor Bell's request for government assistance, this topic was covered in a trip to two ministers, the Minister of Conservation and the Minister of Primary Industries, in around February as part of a budget request. And the initial sum and work program was to put in place a national wallaby strategy, because there are issues in the North Island also. I think I've explained this in the past. But it didn't get any support through the crowd. It had very good support from those ministers and our local members of parliament who we were in contact with, but it didn't get across the budget line, and unfortunately we haven't got any national support at this point for a strategy or any research or technology work or support and behind it. It's not to say that won't be there in the future, but I think we just need to sit down with ECAN at the start of next triennium and say, all right, what are our research needs and how do we go forward? And that might involve the government, but it may not. So okay. I'm happy to move the recommendations.
Thank you. Thank you. And some more good words. Dr. Palmer, how do we put some time tension into this issue? Is it like, is it about the operational program and the milestones and the strategic outcomes, and that as a council, you know, we say, well, over the next 6 months, this is what we expect. The pest plan in itself could take a bit of time. How do we achieve that so it doesn't continue to take as much time?
So, Mr. Chairman, on page 16 of your agenda is the implementation timetable. And you'll see that there are dates specified for things like agreed research priorities. At the moment, this council doesn't have any clear sense of what its research needs are and what its priorities are, and we need to get those things in order jointly with ECAN so that then we can make a compelling request to the government. So there are some foundational things there. And you'll see a number of other things which are all time-bound. Okay. A number of these things are happening anyway. We don't need a decision today from you for these things to happen because they are happening anyway, together with ECAN.
Okay, so you're saying that in... thank you. I've forgotten about these dates, to be honest. October this year, there'll be a draft joint work program and you'll finalise it February next year.
Mr. Chairman, there's been a number of things where I think the two organisations might have been talking across each other on things like communications about origin of sightings. So what this does is ensure that we've got a common and consistent view of the species. Other things like you'll see there, analysis, interpretation and reporting. I've ensured that we've got that in there so that we have joint expert analysis, interpretation and reporting. To date, what you have received has been data. What you haven't received is any analysis about trends and that kind of thing. So a number of these things are underway at the minute, but what this does is strengthen it and adds value to them.
Okay. Any more discussion? No? Councillor Decker?
It would be quite good if somehow or other the Chief Executive could remind us of what happened in 2012, because I can't remember that. What ball did we drop and how big was it?
Chairman, in 2012, Environment Canterbury invited us to contribute funding toward barriers on the north side of Aviemore Dam, involved cattle stop type structure on the two roads that, that go into Aviemore. You can't put them on the dam, so it's got to be the approach roads and fencing. Environment Canterbury had committed funding to that, as had Meridian Energy. This council said no, it did not have funding for such a thing, and it fell away.
Did it come to governance?
No, it was a staff decision at the time.
It didn't come to governance.
Well, I don't know that it didn't, but what I've seen on the documents is it was an exchange of letters at a staff level. Yes. I can't recall at the time whether it came to council.
Yeah, because I certainly can't recall it.
Yes. So that's the kind of thing that I want to look at again. I spent a day in the field last week with staff looking at those kind of things to bring it back to council. What is the best use of our money, given we've got research needs potentially, physical structures, communications, there's a whole raft of things, and we've got to be a bit more strategic about the total quantum and how much we apportion to those different things, and to do it jointly with ECAN. There's quite a bit of work to do.
Yep, that's good
advice. Thank you. Councillor Noon.
Thanks, Mr Chair. Look, I was a bit grumpy when I read this MOU, but I accept it's, you know, we need to collaborate and cooperate and communicate and all the rest of it, and I appreciate an MOU is not going to have main objective is to kill every wallaby south of the border. But I think that there's no reason why we can't, as of today, yesterday or whatever, continue the fight against wallabies coming south on the border, because essentially our current pest management plan, the one that was adopted in 2009, has got wallabies there as an exclusion pest. So forget about the current process with the pest management plan, which isn't complete. We've got the tools in our toolbox to just deal with it and get on with it. The other thing I want to share with you, last week I was out on the Tauri and I happened to bump into Doug Hall, and he said, oh, come over to Highland Helicopters and have a look at this new camera technology, this $1 million camera technology, where he's in partnership essentially with Highland Helicopters. Now you're going to ask me what does this technology mean. It's megapixel still camera, an infrared camera, a gyro stabilizer, and a geo tracking technology all wrapped up in one. So it's right up there. The day I was there, there was two Australian I'm not sure who they were representing, but they came over. Special trip to Dunedin to actually look at this gear. Now, Dr. Palmer has just mentioned that Environment Canterbury have trialled this material. The Highland Helicopter operator, Paul Williams, I think it was, he showed me all this information. So I suppose I'm just stressing the point. I'm heartened to hear Dr. Palmer is suggesting that ORC are going to trial this as well. So I assume that's the way I took your comments, Doctor. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. I think it would be really, really important for governance to come up to speed with what is available here in Otago. This is unique, high-tech technology which potentially can actually deal with this issue, but it will cost money. So, just wanted to share that with you and obviously leave it in the hands of Dr. Palmer. But, yes, thank you.
Okay, so there it is. If there's no further discussion, we have a mover of the recommendation. Do we have a seconder?
Yes.
Councillor Noon, that the council receives a report, affirms council's commitment to collaborate, cooperate and communicate, endorses the MOU, authorises the council chairman to make any final minor amendments, notes proposed implementation timetable that Dr. Palmer referred to. So there it is. I put that motion. Those for?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Let's move to the next report. Matters for noting. General Manager's report on progress by Peter Winder. The purpose to update the committee on regulatory activity in the last period. Key points. There was enforcement action taken in regard to a breaching consent condition for a wastewater discharge. There's various forestry sites which have fish spawning areas within their area of work have been prioritised for inspections. There were no dairy inspections. In regard to contaminated sites, there's some more commentary there. Given the previous ministry's decision to not fund Waitaki District Council with remediation regarding the two landfills exposed by coastal erosion, the next steps in relation to these landfills are to engage with the ministry on a national approach, possibly seek funding, But the second is to work with the Waitaki District Council to make sure that the risks associated with these sites are appropriately managed. So there's ongoing work there as opposed to stepping aside. In relation to compliance improvement actions, there's the recruitment of a new team leader, compliance, three additional staff, development, rollout of a training program, there's review of warrants. And one thing I'm really looking forward to is work on the full risk-based compliance and enforcement strategies that progressed with the first draft due at the end of July. Mr. Winder, any comments, anything I've missed out there? Like that risk-based, what's the next step with that?
So, Mr. Chair, we received, I now have the first draft of that. We've got some more work to do at a staff level with that before we come back and start testing it with you. Given the conversation that took place in the policy committee, you would be pleased to note that one of the issues that's in that is how we deal with our responsibilities under the National Policy Statement for Drinking Water to deal with that part of our compliance responsibilities. But the other things beyond that I would like to highlight that we note there that we're working through appointments of new staff. We've made significant progress in appointing new staff as environmental officers and investigation officers in both Dunedin and Alexandra. We are heading towards having a full complement of staff, including the additional roles that we have in this year's annual plan. We are still chasing some team leader vacancies that are important. The other things that I'd like to highlight or comment on relate to fires and outdoor burning, the landfill in the Victoria landfill, and a couple of other compliance issues.
Let's do that now.
So, with respect to...
Or shall we come to that? Let's do that now.
Thanks. So, with respect to the Victoria landfill, where we have received a number of complaints about odour, the Victoria landfill is a consented landfill. It has consents in place to discharge to air, to discharge leachate, and a number of other consent conditions relating to a contaminated site and how it is managed. The one really important thing that is not part of its current consent conditions is a methane extraction system. So if you were to apply the current modern standards as to what is expected of a landfill, they are filled in cells. As each cell is capped, you put in a methane extraction system, which then burns the methane, usually to generate electricity. That requirement is not part of the consent for this landfill. That reflects the age of the consent.
Okay. Is it the issue?
Methane. So the smell that people are detecting further down the gorge is methane. That's the nature of the smell that comes. And methane is heavy and thick, which means it travels along and around. And in particular, where you get temperature inversion in very still, calm times, methane that escapes overnight will accumulate and be quite potent first thing in the morning, which explains why we can get complaints first thing in the morning and then we send out an enforcement officer middle of the day and the smell has substantially dissipated because of air movement. So there are issues about that. So in terms of where we are at, we are in the midst of a full audit of the landfill and its compliance with consent conditions, and we are in the midst of a review of the consent itself to introduce the requirement for them to manage methane. That's part of a process that's been going for a little while now. We've yet to complete that, but that's urgent. They are working through the design of a methane system for the landfill to control it. We will continue to do what we can to ensure that they meet their consent obligations and that we put in place a framework to effectively manage methane. In terms of fires and outdoor...
Sure. So, Councillor Laws, you kindly raised that matter. There are various details. That's a constructive status report, yeah?
Yeah, no, that's good. But obviously it leads to inevitable questions. So can I just tease you out on that response? The methane has been a major factor for not just weeks or months, but years, and it's been reported. We are now going to do something about it, and it might have something to do with your personal intervention. So, you know, I'm not going to stop people doing that. I just want to clarify that in response to the local community who have to, particularly every winter, go through it, but it's really a major pollutant for our international and national visitors as well who have to go through there. We are going to change the consent conditions.
That's the process that we're working through.
How long is that going to take you?
I can't answer that today. In part, that will depend on the willingness of the operator to, having found a design that works, to implement it quickly.
Okay. And is the operator the Queensland Lakes District Council?
No, they have a contractor that operates the landfill on their behalf.
Right,
on
but Davis. Who has the consent? The QLDC?
The QLDC.
The QLDC. So they're ultimately responsible for that landfill, is that correct?
Yes.
Right. So they are the ones who are going, who you are going to have to negotiate the consent with?
And, well, I mean, because of the nature of the contract they have with the operator, they will also have an interest in this, and we'll need to work that through.
Can I ask for a weekly update every 6 weeks as part of regulatory, how we're going on that issue, please? You do it for other things.
We can do that.
Yeah, just as part of your report every 6 weeks. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. The illegal burning, or the burning that occurred?
I just got a question on Victoria Flats.
Yeah, sure.
I can recall in the early 2000s, the Dunedin City Council essentially, to comply at Green Island, they were required to install a methane collection regime, system, whatever, it might have taken 3-4 years to put in play. I'm very surprised that landfills throughout Otago aren't complying with the same government legislation that's actually already in play. Am I off the mark?
I was surprised when I discovered that that's the situation that we're in. I mean, methane management is a standard part of the guidelines for how you operate landfills. It's really important. So, yeah.
And why haven't we acted before on this issue?
The review of the consent conditions was underway before the most recent round of complaints, and I can't answer as to why something didn't happen before that.
So, do we have you must have some idea of when you're going to settle this issue, though.
Not right here today. It's on my radar screen and the list as to things that we need to address and fix, and we will do that. But right today, I can't say how long that will take.
No, and that's fair enough. And you've agreed to give regular progress updates. Okay, in terms of burning in the QLDC area and the issues?
So, first, we need to recognise that open burning in rural areas is a permitted activity under the air plan, provided it does not result in discharge to air that's offensive and objectionable beyond the boundary of the property. So there is a legitimate expectation from a variety of rural land users that open burning is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. It is not a perfectly legitimate thing to do immediately alongside a residential area which is going to get covered in smoke, or where the likely plume of smoke that arises from it will cause all sorts of other issues for people that are more remote. On Sunday, we dealt with a fire at one end of the Remarkables, and during that incident, the plume of smoke extended to Kingston. In my view, that has quite clearly resulted in an outcome that is offensive and objectionable. We are working through the issues that go with that, and expect to take enforcement action and potentially a prosecution following that.
Okay.
But we're in the middle of that process.
Okay.
There were a range of other fires. We need to address and assess every one of those on the same basis as to whether the result is offensive and objectionable, and we will do our best to respond to everything that we're notified with. We have a limited resource to do that. So I suppose my key message for anybody that is contemplating open burning is they need to think jolly carefully before they light the match as to whether the combustible material that they have assembled is actually combustible and will burn, i.e. is not green and straight off the tree, and will not cause offence to neighbours.
Okay, so the ADT's not here, as I understand it. So is that something this council needs?
Exactly.
Is that something this council actually needs to have a communication plan around?
We do, and I think every councillor needs to equally understand that is the test that applies.
Okay. Yeah, but we actually need to tell them. I mean, at the moment, there is an appalling level of ignorance out there to which we're not helping, given that we've had this issue last year and now we've got it again. This has been going on in our neck of the woods now for years. Now, what rural folk do in rural areas in their own time and their own efforts is not the problem. It's when, as you say, they've decided to pollute an entire valley, or what they're doing is causing people to move out of their homes for the day or days because of the damage that's being caused by their ignorance and by their lack of care. Now, we need to get that message out there now, because that problem is going to be here again this weekend too.
Yes, it will. And since the media isn't in the room, the other complicating factor here is Fire and Emergency New Zealand.
Yes.
Because the fire that we dealt with on Sunday was permitted by them, and they had an officer a rural fire officer on site that authorised the lighting of the fire. Which means that one of the issues that we're considering at the moment is, and to what extent are they also responsible, and to what extent do we need to consider action against Fire and Emergency New Zealand?
You throw the book at them.
And I think, if I can just add to that, there were a number of us involved in trying to get some action from Fire and Emergency in terms of getting assistance to put the fire out, and we were refused at the highest level of Fire and Emergency in Otago.
Now, that's just a point.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I think my days in CODC, I'm pretty sure I'm saying the right thing, is that we used to approve the burning off when farmers applied for burning off, which has been going on for 150 years against the laws.
So what?
And, well, it's been going on for 150 years, and there's a real reason for that. And we have to be careful, and that's probably how all the catchment boards and the earlier OIC people have looked at it.
Is that a slightly different issue, or is that the same issue?
Well, it's the issue that Councillor Laws raised here in this chamber with regards to North Burn Station.
Yeah.
What it is how you manage that burn-off, and that's probably where it's got to be. Where that particular farmer on that time, I believe, probably burnt off too much country all at once, and the wind change and various other things. But burning off of farming land, which is going to be the same sort of smoke at times because of our topography, and when they, you know, when it's calm, is that it's obviously an economic issue for that farmer to have to do that because of farming procedure, but it's also an environmental issue as far as fires and everything else, burning country that you may not want to get burnt, because that can lead to, when things get dry out, to be a very serious prone fire risk. So we need to manage this very, very carefully.
Okay, Councillor Woodhead.
I don't think there's as much ignorance about the rules as actually...
Just defiance then, as it's there.
Yeah. Mm. And in fact, well, I've seen some witnessed some behaviour recently. The fire's been lit at 5:30 on Friday night that, in my view, are deliberately trying to get around us and our compliance, and we've all seen it, and we've wet product at this time of year doesn't meet our standards. So and the year plan's due for a review, but that's some time away. But actually, technology's moved on too, where there's some decent product around. You can actually get a chipper in and deal with it, or you can mulch it. There's a range of options without just lighting the fire.
Yeah.
So we need to remind fins about the responsibilities.
Yeah.
And maybe shake a stick at them, and then do some comms to our wider community and say, hey, with some photos attached, even if we have to pay for the advert, and say, this is not good enough and it won't be tolerated.
Yeah, and Mr. Windett, like, in terms of our communication, we'll also, it's not acceptable to do this at 5:30 and into the night, even though you can't see it. You can, it's still an offence. Yeah. You can taste it now. It was Councillor Brown and then Councillor Robinson.
Just the question: do we still use our burning code of practice? Because we did have a burning code of practice. Is it still, obviously it sets out who you've got to get permission of, who has to be advised, and everything? Is it still in utilisation?
I suspect it might.
Yes.
Interesting.
Which is a different, that's the high country burning, against the pile of green trees.
But Councillor Bell did refer to that scenario, and they have the similar but different issues. Councillor Robinson?
Yeah, I guess as well as the belligerent, there is the belief, I suppose, that some things are all right because we've always done them and that's going to be okay. We burn stubble in North Otago and it goes all over the show, but that's okay because we just do that. And we you go on a nice sunny day anywhere around Otago at this time of year and we've got a fire on a still day. And generally, it's within our boundaries, which is fine because we've got a rule, no offensive or objectionable beyond our own boundary. If we want to have it on our own boundary, that's all good. If you're doing high country burning, it's on your own boundary, great. But if you're burning green waste, no matter what, it's a no. So there are people that still think, okay, it's a nice still day, I'm keeping it going straight up, that's all good. And there's people who think, yeah, I'm burning stubble and that's great because, or whatever, we've always done it. And actually, the rules say something different. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's sort of watch the space a bit,
yep.
Mr. Winder. I think we've done, I do apologise, Councillor. I did see your hand go up too before.
I hope that we're fairly diplomatic in how we spoke to fans. And I never actually thought that I'd ever be sitting anywhere defending fans because they're not. But they are just doing their job. They've got criteria when they issue a permit.
Yeah.
And I'd also ask, I mean, it surprises me that a member of fans was there
to supervise the lighting of the fire.
Because was he there as a friend or was he there as a fans person, but irrespective of that, they've got their sets of rules, we've got our rules. It only needs to be a bit of a communication.
Yeah, we need to meet.
But I mean, I wouldn't be running around jumping up and saying, well, you're fans, you're not doing your job, because they did do their job.
Yeah.
And absolutely,
Actually, I withdraw my previous comment, because you pointed out that there's potential legal process going on here.
So we're considering options. The point that I would make is that everybody has responsibility and obligations under the Resource Management Act. Sure. So there is no get out of jail free card for fens if they authorise or do something that breaches the rules under the RMA.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've done pretty well with this issue, haven't we? Even though I see hands.
Just one thing I wanted to make sure of, Mr. Chair, is that. One of the things that we talked about around here is buying a bit of space, getting a press release or two out or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the ODT man's not here. That's going to happen?
Yes.
Great.
That's good. Okay. So the recommendation is that we receive this report. Do we have a mover for this?
Able to move that, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Woodhead. A seconder. Councillor Neal, I'll put that motion. Those four?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Right. The next report is Consents and Building Control by Joanna Gilroy, who puts in her apologies. Mr. Peter Winder is here, of course. Purpose is a high-level overview of the consents and building control activity of council and deemed permit replacement progress in the last period. It points out that there was one application publicly notified. That was the application for QLDT to authorise discharges of wastewater to freshwater in circumstances or may enter freshwater that may occur because of a blockage or breakage in the QLDT wastewater network. And I think in that situation, a hearing panel is yet to be confirmed. There was one objection to processing costs received. This related to processing costs for a bylaw approval. a hearing for an objection processing costs to disturb the bed of a stream occurred, and the decision was to refund part of the cost. The Kyburn, this is a similar sort of status where there's general agreement, but it's now in the Environment Court. There's confirmation that 45% of the decisions do take some time out to enable the applicant to review conditions. There's no replacement applications of deemed permits. And finally, there's an update in terms of the review of Council's resource consenting function where the filing has been completed. And this is all good. A senior consents officer in the Alex office has now started. A new consents officer in the Dunedin office. Interviews with two team leaders. Various work on 6A. Recommendations regarding deposit fees. Report templates. Consent conditions. And so forth. So well done.
Right, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the recommendation.
Okay. Any comment, Mr. Windett? No? Do we have a seconder? Councillor Kempton, any discussion?
Question.
Councillor Laws?
Where are we with the Lindis? Do you know?
We're awaiting the decision of the court. The court.
No indication as to when we're going to get that?
No. So we wait and see.
Any other discussion? Councillor Deacon.
I was bothered to read that we've got an objection to processing costs that was lodged 10 years ago, which is still unsettled.
Yeah, and there's actually... the council has 18 objections to processing costs in the system.
That's a significant decrease from what we had.
down from 27 in the calendar year. But yes. To answer Councillor Decker's...
If that's just that specific one that's been sitting there for 10 years. That must be a cause for shame, surely.
Yes.
Is it accruing interest?
So... As is obvious from the reduction, we are making a concerted effort to get things shipshape and to sort out all of those that are outstanding.
Okay.
And similarly, any older resource consents that have been on hold at the request of the applicant for some time, we're working through trying to make sure that we've sorted out anything that is less than perfect.
Good, and thank you for your transparency in that matter. Okay, so I think we're good, unless...
Councillor
Robinson.
There's a new form that's been developed for 6A consents and it's going to get handed out, hopefully not too widely.
No, I saw that. I skimmed over it. It's a live live world we live in.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
I did say this morning that we spent quite a lot of effort trying to progress 6A implementation before we got to where we did this morning.
Okay, Councillor Robinson, after a mover to receive this report, Councillor Robinson, seconder, Councillor Woodhead, I'll put the motion, those four.
Aye.
Against, carried. And the final...
We already had movers, actually.
Have we?
Yeah.
I do apologise. Okay, the final report is enforcement activity by Peter Keller. This report details RMA Biosecurity Act and Building Act enforcement activities in the last period. Now, there's been no legal proceedings occurred in the last period. There is included a comparison of legal proceedings data over the past 3 years, as outlined. If you looked at that, that certainly raised various questions to me. And in previous reports at this time of the year, typically there's no commentary and we all draw our own conclusions. And so... just like to thank Mr. Winder for actually providing some commentary and being quite upfront and transparent. And three key points. The first is on the page 22 that for some type of enforcement activities, the number of incidents has increased, for others it has decreased. This reflects a mix of factors, including the number of complaints. The second point, the number of environmental complaints received increased during the last year. In response to the increase, the compliance team has increasingly prioritised the response to incidents, focusing first on those where environmental harm is obvious and immediate. And the third point is that for part of this last year, the compliance team has been below full strength. And that's something that has been incrementally reported. And this limited the council's ability to cover the full scope of the intended compliance program. We've noted that, for example, in some of, I think, the dairy inspections. The compliance team is in the final stage of making appointments to fill existing vacancies. So, Mr. Winder, when we look at these numbers on page 26, comparing the 3 years, the total number in terms of total authorised proceedings is significantly down this year. It's 14 2 years ago, 6 and then 3. But one of the key differences is regarding dairy effluent, discharge of contaminants to land and breach of the regional rural effluent. So you pointed out that there's a range of factors. And as a matter of interest, yeah, any other comment? Like, what is there any other conclusions we should draw?
Well, the most obvious conclusion is that I don't think we can read a decline in authorised proceedings as success in terms of improved environmental outcomes.
Yeah. Thank you. And I appreciate your honesty and transparency in that. Any comments, anybody?
Happy to move the recommendation.
Okay. Second. So we've got a mover and a second. Is there any further discussion? I think that's to receive that report. I do, Mr. Winder, Ms. Gardner and others, Joanna, and everybody in the consensus compliance, thank you for your honesty and transparency and actually taking some really difficult issues on front on like we need to. So a big thank you. I put the motion, those for, aye, against carried. Thank you. Close the meeting, the Regulatory Committee. Thank you.